Misrepresentation of the numbers of the
Rav had just smell up the same thing.
Yeah, I wanted to just speak a little bit today about many of the shadows that come up in terms of Chola and Shabbos. I want to, the course of the Shia really accomplish two things. First of all, to give the proper definition of the different levels of Chola that appear in the Halacha, and with some very much lamaisa applications, we can talk about every possible shadow that comes up, to try to give some good illustrations of some of the more common shadows that come up within the different types of Chola. So the first type of chol that we deal with is clearly the most serious of all the chol, and that's the chol shi'esh bo sakana. This is based on a sugya at the end of Maseches Yuma, when the Mishnah, the Gemara tells us, when you have a chol shi'esh bo sakana, so basically you're permitted to violate, you're required to violate all the dini atzeirah, with the three exceptions of a berizor, gibe arayis, and shvi'ah d'avim. Usually you don't get those shadows, as long as that, hopefully not too many. But with those exceptions to those three, so then the halacha is that the koach nefesh is zaycha kol atzeirah kula. The Gemara learns this out from Sukkim, a whole series of Sukkim in the end of Maseches Yuma. One of the most famous makaris is the Chai Ben Velo Shiyamos Behem. Another makar is Rishamu Ben Eizos HaShabbos, Chalel Shabbos Achas, Kedei Shiyishma Shabbos HaSharbei. Whole series of different makaris from the Din, that Pikuach Nefesh is Zaycha, basically all these surim in the Torah. The Gemara has a Chiddush in the Sugi Pikuach Nefesh. The Gemara says that not only is Bade Pikuach Nefesh Zaycha, but even Safek Pikuach Nefesh is Zaycha. But even if you have a somewhat of a slim chance that the person's life may be at risk, so one is required to be Mechal Shabbos, one is required to be Yom Kippur, Yom Chamis and Pesach, whatever the case may be, even if it's only a Safik Pikuach Nefesh. Hatzam Sefer writes in a tshuva that even within the realm of Safik Pikuach Nefesh, there's certain Gvul Yesh B'davar. Safik means that it's some degree of a realistic fear. Maybe it's a 1% chance, but what if it's something which is mamish, one echad mile million, one in a billion chance that what you're going to do is that if you don't Mechal Shabbos, you may end up costing the person's life. So the Chassam Sefer says that's not even considered to be a Safik Pikuach Nefesh. It has to be within the realm of normal reality. It's something which is so mishunadik, so mamish yetzim in a klal, that no one in a million years would ever think about it. That's not even considered to be a Safik Pikuach Nefesh. The context of the tshuva, the Chassam Sefer, we look at it back now, it's a little bit humorous, the tshuva, but it was a very, very burning issue in his days. It was a decree given by the non-Jewish government that you weren't allowed to bury Mason for 3 days. And apparently what had happened was, there was somebody who had died, and at least they thought he had died, and then they were at the Levaya, and then all of a sudden the guy got up, he didn't like the Hesped, so he got up in the middle and he said, I'm alive and well. It turns out that they almost buried someone who was mamash alive. So when that story happened, so the government realized that we're burying people too quickly, we gotta let them sit for a while until we're really convinced that the person is really dead. So they made a gezeira that you're not allowed to bury people for 3 days. So somebody wrote a halachic defense of that practice by saying that, yeah, they're absolutely right, the government's right, because it's pikuach nefesh, you see that they bury people right away, the person may be alive, they're going to be killing him, so it's pikuach nefesh is zoch the mitzvah of kavod tikrena b'yomahu. The Chassam Sofer wrote back respectfully that he didn't think that was correct, that he thought that one in a billion people who gets up at their own levaya, one in a billion people, he thought that was so far removed that doesn't even fall into the category of pikuach nefesh, and pikuach nefesh has to be realistic. If it's not realistic, it's mamish in the and the once in a billion chances, that's not considered to be pikuach nefesh. But putting that crazy case aside, normally anything that falls into the realm of normal fear, if a doctor has a chashash, even a somewhat remote chashash, or the patient himself has a chashash, even a somewhat remote chashash, that is considered to be pikuach nefesh, and one would be mechuyev to be mechal Shabbos, it would be mechuyev to be Yom Kippur, whatever the dinim of pikuach nefesh are.
Did
there is a very basic question, a very fundamental question in the Rishonah. When you have a situation of a chola sheyesh bei sakana, and there are certain treatments that have to be given to the chola. So very often, most of the treatments, in fact, are clearly sakana oriented. So you have a person who's just had a heart attack, and a person who just had a major surgery or something. So there are certain basic things we have to do. You have to look them up to an IV. You have to turn on lights, off lights, whatever things that you have to do in order to the treatment that's necessary to keep them alive, even be suffering. So obviously everybody agrees that that's most of the question. It comes, what if you have a chola who's clearly in the state of pikuach nefesh? He is a chola, he's categorized as a chola sheyesh b'sakana, but there's something that he wants to have done for him, or we would like to do for him, that in and of itself, when we do it or we don't do it, will not really affect his status. It's not going to make or break his, not going to be a life or death issue. It'll make him a little bit more comfortable. Maybe we'll be prop up the bed a little better. We'll feel a little bit better. Maybe we'll be cooking up a bowl of soup. He'll enjoy it. But whether the pot of soup is really going to make him live, or if he doesn't have the pot of soup, he's going to die. So that's not clearly not the case. So what is that loss? Could we say that once somebody reaches the category of a chola sheyesh bo sakana, so then we have, in a sense, a hetzegom, or to do what's called kol tzarchei hachola, whatever's within the realm of normal care of a chola, whatever you would do for him on a Tuesday, you're permitted to do for him on Shabbos as well, even though that particular care is not really pikuach nefesh. Or do we say, no, the hetzer pikuach nefesh is very limited, the scope of pikuach nefesh is, only if it's something which is actually going to affect the outcome, the life and death scenario, either the suffering life or death. If it's something which is, the doctors tell us clearly he's not going to die if he doesn't get the bowl of soup, so we have absolutely no hetzer to do that. To do that would be shul shabbos deraisa. So that was the machlekes between the Magid Mishnah and many others. The way the Mishnah Berurah presents it is that the Rov HaRishon disagreed with the Magid Mishnah. The Magid Mishnah claims that kol tzorchei achola based on the Lashon Rambam, the kol tzorchei achola a mutter on Shabbos. Once the person is a chola sheyesh bo sakana, then everything goes. Whatever the tzorchei achola, whatever the normal care of a chola would be on Tuesday, if normally on Tuesday you make him a cup of tea, then you're allowed to make him a cup of tea on Shabbos also, even though he's not going to die if he doesn't have the cup of tea. And the Mishnah Berurah claims that that's not true. The Mishnah Berurah claims that although the Magid Mishnah did say it, the Mishnah Berurah thinks that most of the poskim disagreed with the Magid Mishnah. So this machlekes is the Magid Mishnah and others. This comes up lamaisa. There are a few practical ramifications I want to just mention now, which is some common shailas that come up from this machlekes is the Magid Mishnah and others. One of the shailas, unfortunately, is a common shaila, is an issue of stitching on Shabbos. If a kid falls, and let's say, for example, my kid just got 30 stitches, just to make it more realistic, so he really did. So let's say he's playing a kickball or something and he runs into first base and he overruns the base. Everyone knows you're allowed to overrun the base. Of course, the rule is you're not supposed to overrun the base into a tree. But kachava. But at least he was safe and he scored the winning run because the game ended because we ended up in the emergency room. But it wasn't a job. It was Sunday. But so what's the bit? So you have to go for, the kid gets a result, gets a head cracked open. So you have to go get stitches. So what's the halacha? So first of all, is stitches an issur deraisa or not? So that's the question. What malacha exactly is involved in stitching up a wound? So some folks can say it's an issur deraisa tofer. He's sewing the skin back together. Other achrarim say, that's not tofer. That's not tofer. Other achrarim say it's kosher because you're tying the knots of the stitches. So a couple of weeks ago, I was standing in the emergency room, so I was really very tempted to have a discussion with the doctor, ask him what he thought about the shaila, but it wasn't really the right time or place to talk about it. But anyway, stitches, let's assume for now that there's an issur deraisa involved in stitching. Not everyone agrees to that, but let's assume that in fact it is a chashash of a deraisa. So to get the wound stitched itself has to be get the pikuach nefesh, because if you don't get the wound cleaned up and closed up, so then it can get infected, chalila, and that could really be potentially pikuach nefesh. Stitching is also something that it's not always necessarily has to be done that moment. It can't be done a week later. But again, that's a medical issue. We're not going to talk so much about the details of the medical angles of the shaila. But if it's a loma that you bring it to the doctor takes a look and says, it's got to get stitched up pretty quickly, so you're allowed to get the stitching done. So now the question is, what if the doctor tells you, listen, normally I would put 30 stitches into this wound, but between me and you, you don't need 30 stitches in order to avoid the pikuach nefesh shaila. The pikuach nefesh shaila should be done away with 15 stitches. You can close it up in a messy way, and well, it's not going to heal so nicely, and it's going to have a scar. It's going to have a bigger scar than it would have if you did it properly. So are you allowed to go ahead on Shabbos and have the Jew go ahead and do the extra stitches? Are you permitted to stitch up the wound entirely on Shabbos, knowing full well that the extra 15 stitches are not really necessary for pikuach nefesh, that the pikuach nefesh is solved with half the job done, and I want to complete the rest of the job because that's what I was doing Tuesday. You want, obviously, the wound to look as nice as possible. You want to minimize the scar. So Mazalman has a chizah where he thinks that it's mutter. He thinks that it's mutter to stitch up the wound normally on Shabbos, the same way you would do it during a regular weekday. And one of the tzvadim that Shlomo Zalman quotes for Kula is this Magid Mishnah. He says that based on this Magid Mishnah, he thinks it would be mutter. But according to the Magid Mishnah, the kol tzorchei achayla nasim b'Shabbos, that you don't have to say that I'm only going to do those things which are pikuach nefesh mamish. But once the person is labeled in the state of pikuach nefesh, so then you're allowed to do whatever the tzarech echol of a regular, whatever you would do on Sunday, you're allowed to do on Shabbos as well. Shlomo Zalman has another svar l'hafo, which was a memetach Shabbos this year. We spoke a little bit about it also. It's somewhat of a difficult svar to understand. But this svar from Shlomo Zalman, we understand. This is mamash an application of the Magid Mishnah. Not everyone agrees to the Magid Mishnah. Mishnah Brura claims that most of the Rishonim agree, but that Mishnah Brura is not agreed upon by everyone. So again, it's very hard to, sitting in the emergency room, it's very hard to be machmir on your child's cheshbon to say that we're not going to stitch it up nicely because the cheshish for the Mishnah Brura. So the ma'aseh, the Magid Mishnah was mount there, and the Rishon Mazalman passing the halacha ma'aseh that's mutter. So far be it from me to say those who want to rely on this psak of Rishon Mazalman, so Rishon Mazalman was from the Gedolei Hador, so I think one has a right to those who want to rely on this psak. There is another application that comes from this chiddush of the Magid Mishnah. This is not so much of a Shabbos shaila, this is more of a Yom Kippur shaila. There is a din that appears in the Shulchan Aruch and Machlokes Yom Kippur that when we feed a chayla on Yom Kippur, so we always try to avoid feeding him the shear. We always try to feed him what's called pachas mikashir. So that's a bit in my, I think it's before Yom Kippur, probably in the shear we spoke about this. No, it's not what we did. Nachisya, last year, the year before, every couple of years we talk about this. So there's a din that you're supposed to feed the chayla pachas mikashir. So there is a big machlokes that folks give him, what type of a chayla are we talking about? That the halacha requires to feed pachas mikashir. If the chayla Mamish needs the shear shawl, and the doctor says he's got to drink a lot right away, he's got to eat right away, then of course you feed him and you give him to drink normally. But the doctor says that there's nothing wrong with him drinking a little bit of water now, and then a little bit more in 10 minutes, a little bit more in 10 minutes, which is 99% of the time, that's really the case. That the medical issues that require somebody to either drink on Yom Kippur usually don't require to eat and drink a tremendous amount at one time. Somebody called me before Yom Kippur this year, the doctor told them they have to drink, I don't know, they said 128 ounces or something of water. I said, when was the last time on a regular Tuesday you drank? You know what that is? That's like, how many of these bottles? What are these bottles? Oh, 10 of these bottles a day. Who drinks that much? Maybe you save a lot of shear when you drink a lot of water, but I don't know. So we try to figure out what exactly the doctor meant by that cryptic statement. But anyway, normally a person that has to drink or eat on Yom Kippur, so it usually can be done in small intervals, most of the time. You have to check the doctor, but most of the time it can be done that way. So according to the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch, such a person would be required to drink and to eat pachas mikashir. So Reb Chaim Soloveitchik had a tremendous chiddush. Reb Chaim claimed that when is this true that a person is required by the Shulchan Aruch to eat pachas mikashir? That's talking about the person is not yet a chola. The person has a certain medical condition that may become aggravated by fasting. So when a person does not yet have the chela shem and agavra as being a chayla yet, so then the halacha insists that you have to eat pachas mikashir. But if the person just get out of surgery, the person is achi din already considered to be a chayla, so then machil nosal kol tzarcho. There's no requirement to feed pachas mikashir. What is this chiddush of Reb Chaim based on? So the Briskarov writes that his father's psak was based on this Magid Mishnah. Reb Chaim held that the Magid Mishnah was right, that whenever you have someone who was labeled as a chel eshesh b'sakana, not that they're going to become a chel eshesh b'sakana, but they're already a chel eshesh b'sakana. The guy just got out of the operating room, the person is having a heart attack, the person is already in the state of a chel eshesh b'sakana. So Reb Chaim held like the Magid Mishnah that just as you're allowed to do kol tzarcho b'Shabbos, you're allowed to feed him kol tzarcho on Yom Kippur as well, and there's no need to feed pachas mikashir. That din of pachas mikashir was only said for the person who's not yet a chela. And others disagree with the psak of Reb Chaim. Those who didn't accept the Magid Mishnah clearly aren't going to accept the psak of Reb Chaim as well. So here this becomes a little bit more of a delicate issue. In contrast to the case in the emergency room with the stitches, there you really have something to lose. If you don't follow this school of Reb Shlomo Zalman, you can end up with a big scar. Whereas over here, the doctors tell you there's nothing wrong with eating Bachas Bachas in Mashiach. So you don't have to rely on Reb Chaim. There's no great tzarich to rely on Reb Chaim Shlomo Zalman. Maybe you're a brisker, you have a mesayra from base bris to follow every, you follow all the Reb Chaim, it's been the Kula Ben Lechum Ras, and then you follow the Reb Chaim also. Those who don't necessarily always follow all the psachim of Reb Chaim, so I think that this is, I would be a little bit nervous to invoke this psach, because the Mishnah Brura claims that most Rishon did not accept the Magid Mishnah, and the Reb Chaim's psach is all based on the premise of the Magid Mishnah, correct. And there's really no tzarech, there's no big need, there's no great need. What's the need on Yom Kippur? The need is that it'll drive the person less crazy because they can just eat it one shot rather than having to break it off. Noon, Mesiras Nefesh for most of the Rishonim, I think is probably in order. So I'd say that unless a person has a specific psak to follow Reb Chaim and Yom Kippur, so maybe it would be better, in fact, that to follow the conventional view, the view of the Mishnah Berura, that one should always insist on eating Pachas Pachas with the Shir. There's a big machlekes of Rishonim when we say that one is permitted to do things, one is required to do things on Shabbos for Cholish Yesh B'Sakona. So does that mean one is allowed to do it just straight out? Or does that mean that one is supposed to try to avoid it if at all possible? We're supposed to try to bend over backwards to avoid doing Yisurim Deraisa. How would we avoid doing Yisurim Deraisa? One way to do it is to do things like Aydei Shinui. Very often there are certain things that can be done for the Chola that can be done Aydei Shinui. There are certain things that can't be done Aydei Shinui. If a person's having a heart attack, they have to do an open heart surgery, so it's hard to believe that they're going to be able to do that Derech Shinui. So certain things have to be done, obviously, normal. But there are a lot of things that can be done Derech Shinui. So the question is, are we supposed to be makpid to do things derech shinui or not? So this is the machlekes of the Rambam and the Ramban. It all depends upon how to read a Gemara towards the end of Masechta Shabbos. The Gemara speaks about a yoledes, when you have a woman who is in the process of giving birth. She's already a woman in labor. So a woman in labor is considered to be in the gather of pikuach nefesh. The Gemara has a few different discussions. It was a whole discussion about how far into labor is a woman considered to be in the state of pikuach nefesh. So the woman's in her 6 months and she's stretching, so that's not called yoledes yet. So she's in her 9th month and she has a contraction here and there. That's also not considered to be yoledes. A woman has to be really in the process of yoledes in order to be labeled as a cholish yesh b'sakana. So how far into the process of labor must she be? So the Gemara gives you a whole bunch of different shiurim about either she's starting to bleed already, or she can't walk anymore, or she's already sitting on the mashbir, she's already on the birthing stool, whatever that means. The Gemara gives you a whole bunch of different shiurim, what's considered to be already at the point that she's considered to be pikuach nefesh. But the poskim point out that all of those shiurim are meaningless this man hazeh, because all of those shiurim are all talking about in a society where women gave birth at home. If you give birth at home, so then there's no great rush. That means right now, unless she's really, really far into labor, so there's usually very little that you could do. And very often it's not even real labor. Very often it's false labor. So until you really, really, there's really any issue with pikuach nefesh, it takes much later. Whereas this man hazeh, you have to always take into consideration the travel time to the hospital. So here you can have a guy of real London, his wife's having contractions, so she's timing the contractions and he's in the Mishnah Berura in Shin Kav Ches. So he's looking up and he says, no, wait a second, you didn't meet that Shia yet, the Machlekes of Rishonim. No, oh, you got all the Shittas down, okay, now we're ready to go to the hospital. At that point, you can, I hope you know how to deliver babies well, because the baby probably will have been delivered at that point. So therefore the post can say, obviously you have to take that into consideration. So you have to give yourself enough time in order to get to the hospital. So what is the shiur bizman hazeh? When do we say a woman is the yoledes bizman hazeh? So the answer is whatever the doctor tells them. It's whatever the doctor tells them. Usually women, they'll ask the doctor, at what point are we supposed to call you? So the doctor will say, when you get contractions of 5 minutes apart. But that's not an OBGYN, I'm just, passing over. They have contractions of 5 minutes apart. Or they tell you when the water breaks. Or you start to bleed significantly. Whatever the shiur that the normal doctors give for childbirth, at what point you call the doctor? So the same time you would call the doctor on Tuesday, that's when you call the doctor on Shabbos. And if the doctor tells you to go into the hospital, so whether or not you met the criteria of the Gemara in the end of Masechta Shabbos, you go to the hospital. So those criteria don't take into consideration a whole modern day childbirth setup. That's clear from the poskim. Somebody once told me a story that someone was in labor Shabbos in the afternoon. They started going to labor Shabbos in the afternoon, and they clearly would have gone to the hospital if it would have been a Tuesday, but they just felt, they didn't want to be Michael Shabbos. And they said to me that they were so happy that they were able to last through Shabbos, but they were able to last not only through Shabbos, but they even waited for Rabbeinu Tam's man before they called the doctor. I don't think Rabbeinu Tam would have been very happy about that at all. I think that was also min haTorah, a bittul of nishmatam and asher sefem, a bittul of the din of achai behem v'loshi yamos behem. So there's no reason to be machmir these kinds of things, and fakir one is not, of course, not permitted to be machmir these kinds of things. But so you have a woman who's already yoledes. So once she's reached the point of yoledes, then she's beged to pikuach nefesh. So the Gemara gives a whole series of different tzrachim that a woman in labor may need. So one thing she may need oil for something, maybe a lubricant for something. So you're allowed to bring her oil. Let's say the only place to get the oil is from the Rishus Arabim. So you're allowed to carry the oil car, it's pikuach nefesh. So the Gemara says, well, you could do a derech shinui. You really should also try to do a derech shinui. How do you do a derech shinui? So the Gemara says you put it in your hair. You put it in your hair, and then you carry it in your hair, and then you squeeze it out of your hair. So the Gemara is not commenting on the sanitary issues involved. We'll put that on hold for another time. But the Gemara says you should try to do it in such a way that it's a shinui. It's in that sugya that the Gemara talks about tzchita b'seya. It's that sugya that whether you can brush your teeth in Shabbos or not depends on. It's that sugya whether you can wash your pots with a pot brush or not depends on. Only because the Gemara was talking about the Meshuggah who's walking with the oil in the hair to bring to the woman who's Yeledah. So the Gemara says that you're supposed to be Meshana. If you're able to be Meshana, you're supposed to be Meshana. If you can't be Meshana, then you bring it normally. So the Rabban was Medayik from this Gemara to see if, although the Gemara happens to have been talking about Yeledah, so Slav Dafke Yeledah. The Rabban and Sefer Torah, the Adam writes, is talking about any chayla she'esh b'sakana. The Gemara is telling us, whatever you don't have to do in Nisat Yeraisa, so you should do it in Nisat Yerabanan. Why not? There's nothing to lose. If it's a type of a tzorech that can't be done either shinoi, or it's going to take too long and can't interfere with the proper care of the chalut, of course you can't do it. But if it's a type of a tzorech that can be done either shinoi without much of a tircha, without much of a delay, so the Rambam says, I'll be a mechir to do that. And the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says that's a unique din, it's a din prati only by yoledes. My high manishani yoledes from other chalim. So the Mefarshim explained that yoledes, although technically speaking it's really pikuach nefesh, but since it doesn't really seem to be pikuach nefesh, since it's part of the teva ha'olam, that's the way Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world, that women give birth, most women survive childbirth. So the Chachamim were concerned that since it doesn't really appear to be an outright pikuach nefesh, so therefore they instituted that you should try to be mishana when at all possible. But me'ika mikra din, when it comes to a regular chayla, then there's no need to be mishana. So according to the Ramban, you have to be mishana all the time, whenever it's able. And according to the Rambam, so you're not mechuyav to be mishana, you're only mechuyav to be mishana, according to the Rambam, by your lead. This is machlokes, it's a mechaber and the Ramah to paskin. The mechaber paskins like the Rambam, and the Ramah paskins like the Ramban. The Ashkenazim generally follow the Ramah, so Ashkenazim should follow this psak of the Ramah as well. That when you have a chodesh yesh by sakana, so if you're able to be mishana, again, assuming that it's not going to have an effect to you there on the outcome of the proper outcome of treatment, so then once you try as best as possible to be mishana, to try to limit violating an issur d'oraisa by always doing it there as shina. Ma'aseh shaya kachlaiva, we lived in the Heights several years ago, so it was a Friday night, and one of the neighbors, the woman went into labor. The guy came knocking on my door and asked me, what's he supposed to do? Should have asked me that 6 months before. Okay, what am I supposed to do exactly? So I said, well, you have to call the doctor. Call a doctor, call a kid, take her to the hospital. So I said to him, you should call on the phone, pick up the phone, Derech Shinu. We'll talk about that in a minute. Pick up the phone, Derech Shinu, when you make a phone call. Then I stopped for a second and said, no, wait a second, you don't have to be Mishana, because this guy was a Sfardi. So I said, you could follow the Rambam, who in the Shulchan Aruch, who said, you don't have to be Mishana for a Chol L'Shiyesh B'Sakara. Then 1 minute later, I said, no, wait a second, I'm sorry, you have to be Mishana, because this is the one case where the Gemara says, Beferish, you have to be Mishana, this is the Gemara B'Yomedes. So this is, I kid you not, this is going on back and forth and back and forth. And Kachava, the woman's didn't give birth, but she, her water broke in the middle of this discussion. So then it was the end of the shinui, and we just got her off to the hospital and fine for the baby. But anyway, that was a deer on 480 West 187th Street, many moons ago. So it's clear, as we said before, that one is only supposed to be Mishana when at all possible. So there are some types of Tzorech Echol that clearly are impossible to be Mishana. That's why Lafini is dicey. What you read in some Tivarim, when they talk about if you have to drive to the hospital on Shabbos, so they give you a whole aitzus about how to be Mishana, how to drive Shalom Kedera. The Lafini is dicey. I don't think one is permitted to follow any of those recommendations. I think if one finds themselves having to drive to the hospital on Shabbos, so one should just drive in a normal manner. Obviously, it goes without saying, you can't put on radio, but Nachum Siegel is not on that anyway, unless I check. So you can't do things that you can get them on the web, though, 24 hours a day. But if things that are clearly not relevant for the driving itself, you can do it. But things that are relevant for the driving, we're going to tell a guy, he's got a brake with a shiner, he's got a signal with a shiner, just drive like a normal person and then try to get there. What you do when you get to the hospital is a different story. It's because of that, because of in general, that we try to minimize Yisurim, if at all possible, it's highly recommended not to be the one to drive to the hospital on Shabbos. 99.9% of the time, there's no need for the person himself, for the Jew himself, to drive to the hospital on Shabbos. There are usually two different types of emergencies. There are two types of pikuach nefeshes. There are some types of pikuach nefesh where every second counts, and there are other types of pikuach nefesh like childbirth, where usually 99% of the time, not every second counts. It's a type of pikuach nefesh. You have to get to the hospital soon. You can't wait for Sorobeya Tamzban is over. You have to get there within reason, but if you get there 5 minutes later, 99.99% of the time, it's not going to make a difference. Of course, you may be the unlucky person who it does make a difference, but usually it's not the case. So when you have a pikuach nefesh, which is every second counts, you're not going to be driving anyway. Those are ambulance calls. You're going to be calling Hatzolah. You're calling 911. You're going to be getting an ambulance to take you. So you're not going to be doing the driving anyway when you have those kinds of pikuach nefesh. When you have the other kinds of pikuach nefesh, say the kid needs stitches. So again, unless the kid is mamash hemorrhaging and you know, there's mamash chashash pikuach nefesh on the spot, so So usually when you get the stitches 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, Malav Lomayr. Well, we have a woman who's in labor, so she just had just contractions 10 minutes apart. The doctor says, okay, it's time to come, you're going to have a baby soon. So again, whether you come 5 minutes later or not, you're going to spend 5 minutes checking into the hospital anyway. So usually, so those kinds of pikuach nefesh, but not every second counts. So clearly, there's no need for you to be driving, so you should have a goy drive for you. So how do you get a goy? So if you have a nice, trusty, non-Jewish neighbor, that's the best way to do it. If you can't do that, then you have to call a goy, your car service, you have to call a cab, and you have to have the goy come in and drive you. To drive yourself under those circumstances is very problematic, because first of all, you're supposed to, if you can get a goy to do something for you without affecting the outcome of your message, you should probably be doing that anyway. And second of all, the driving itself is going to be very difficult, because when you get to the hospital, the first shot is that there's no head to turn off your car. So that's going to be very, very problematic, unless that goofa constitutes pikuach nefesh, to leave a running car in the middle of a hospital parking lot. That's a different question. But to avoid all those questions, one should not be the one driving to the hospital, unless late grade. If you have mamish no choice, so then if you can't get an ambulance, and you can't get a guy, if you have no choice, you have no choice. But putting aside that very, very bizarre situation, you should always try to have a non-Jew drive you. That's why Chochamina Berosho, the person realizes that their wife is in 9 months, she's going to have a baby soon, but one should try to have arrangements ready beforehand for a non-Jewish car service to come and pick you up. So Chochamina Berosho, you have to make certain arrangements for that. So number one, you should find out how much it costs to get from where you're going to the hospital. And whatever it costs, so you should get the money prepared in an envelope from beforehand with a significantly more money added to it for a very nice big fat tip, because as soon as we get finished with the shiur, you're going to see there are going to be a lot of other things you're going to ask this non-Jewish driver to do for you. So first of all, you have to make sure you have money prepared in advance, cash please, to make sure that it's set. And when you call the car service, you have to be aware of a couple of things. So first of all, when you make the phone call, you should try to make the phone call Derech Shinoy. So because again, not every second it counts. If you have to call 911, if you can't play around with the phone, you have to, every second counts, you just call and finish. But if you have time to spare, so then you should try to make the phone call Derech Shinoy. How do you do that? So the Shabbos Paskin, that as long as the connection is made Derech Shinoy, as long as you get the dial tone Derech Shinoy, so that's good enough. You don't have to actually make a Shinoy when you press each of the buttons. Not everyone agrees to that, but the Shabbos holds that if there's any malacha whatsoever involved in the phone call, so then it's only in the actual making of the connection that would be a problem. Unless you have a phone that lights up every time you press a button, it lights up. So then each potential button would be problematic, would be required shooting as well. So the first thing you have to do is make the phone call Derech Shinoy. The second thing you have to do is explain to the person, to the dispatcher, that you need somebody. Number one, who speaks English. That's a very big requirement in certain neighborhoods. You should have somebody, I kid you not, you should have somebody who will be able to understand what's going on, unless you happen to speak Spanish, okay? And number two, you should tell the person in advance that you need a driver to help you. If you live in a place which is a Jewish community, many, many of the care car services there already know how these are the Jews who are going to pay us $200 to the ride three blocks. We know them already. So we have 10 drivers lining up for these guys. But if you live in a place in the boondocks, so you better explain, you know, either explain to the dispatcher, explain to the driver, explain to somebody what you want. Basically, what you want is you want the driver to come in and take the money. You don't want to carry the money, which is a mukta, out to the driver. And number two, if there's an Erev, so then you can take whatever stuff you need and bring it into the car. But if there's no Erev, so then you need the driver to come and take the stuff. What kind of stuff could you take if there's no Erev? So whatever the woman needs, that's for sure. She could take a kutlas vest or whatever she'll feel to make her comfortable. So whatever tzarech and mitzvah could also for sure be permissible to fill up in. So you want to throw in a bottle of grapes juice, you want to throw in a couple of chalros, you want to throw in a chumash, whatever you want to throw in, I don't know, a talit, whatever you need. The tzarech and mitzvah for Shabbos, that's also okay, because that's shvus to shvus, the makom mitzvah. You're asking a goy to carry in an area that's probably only a derabbanan anyway. Most of the areas are not real, which is the rabbins deraisa. So it's the shvus of macham mitzvah, so that would be okay. So whatever's necessary, you're permitted to throw in. There are some folks who are master to throw in even unnecessary things, but usually if it's not necessary, what do you need it for? As its name, as that's what the word unnecessary means. So therefore, the normal standard protocol, what you would need in the bag is whatever your wife needs to make her comfortable, or whatever you need to ensure that you're able to do the mitzvahs on Shabbos properly. So the goy should be instructed to come into the house and take the stuff, take the check, take the envelope with money, take the bag, and put the bag into the car. The guy should also be instructed to open up the car door for you, because when you open up the car, the lights are going to go on. Unless it's some yeshivish car that the lights don't work anymore. Then the guy should be instructed to close the door for you also, because by closing the door, it's going to turn off the lights. And kahena v'kahena, when you get to the hospital, so the guy should be, again, if there's no eruv, most hospitals are not in an area where there's an eruv, so the guy should take the stuff out of the car for you and put it down inside the hospital. Shouldn't hand it to you in the hospital. If he hands it to you, that's like the first Mishnah in Shabbos, that you're involved in the malach also. Should take the bag and put it down in the floor. When you take it, so you should try to make use of this guy. That's why the tip is going to be fairly large. Try to make use of him to minimize any possible isurim that are going to be violated. Again, these are all dealing with the type of pikuach nefesh where you have to get there. But again, it's not you're not going in for a heart attack. Going in for a heart attack, just whatever you got to do, you just do and do first and worry about the lumdus later. But when you have a little bit of time, so then these are things that are supposed to be thought out in advance.
Yeah,
according to Shmuel Shabbos, there's no real malach involved in the actual dialing. If any malach at all, it's only making the connections. So some question that Shmuel Shabbos in both counts. Some say that there is potential issur involved in the dialing, and there are some poskim who say there's no issur involved even in the making of the connection. So maybe no issur involved.
So the connections made when you dial the last button?
And when you get the dial tone, I think that was the chashash of the Shmuel Shabbos. It's not so posh that there's any malacha b'chlal involved in this whole, I don't want nobody come out of here saying that I said a contemporary halacha that it's mutter to talk on the phone on Shabbos, but it's a very detailed question of the Shabbos. What precisely issur is involved, if any, at which stage of the conversation? So first time the Shmuel Shabbos says that you should make the connection ayidei shinud, then he says if you have to hang up, you should also hang up ayidei shinud. Sometimes you have to hang up, sometimes you don't. Let's say if you just called the cab, so obviously you have to, let's say you just called the doctor, so you have to hang up to call a cab or something. Let's say you're waiting for a doctor to call you back, so then obviously if you don't hang up the phone, he's not going to be able to call you back. But let's say you're leaving now, you're on the way to the hospital, you just finished your last phone call, so what do you have to hang up for? So just drop the phone and out the door and finish. So if you don't have to hang up the phone, then you shouldn't hang up the phone.
What about a cell phone?
What about?
Is there any difference between a cell phone and a regular?
Does anything happen? I don't know what happens with a cell phone.
Lights up.
Every button lights up. You try not to use it. You can use a regular line. Yeah. Because you have unlimited calls. You don't want to lose the 3 cents on your Hill Shabbos. It's worth it. Yeah.
Is there anything if a guy turns on the car for you? You don't want to take the guy's time. You don't want to take the manager's time.
No. He'll turn on the car, then you drive. No. Each time you press in the gas, that's 3,600 isur deraisa. That's what I think the Kesher, what's his name, Rabbi Riviat, has in his sefer. He goes through every single time, every single new spark plug, every single day, because that's Zach Heshman. Somebody wrote in a tshuva that on Yontif, if you leave the car off before Yontif, so it's mutter to drive a car on Yontif, because it's just motiv al esh. So it's not true. Folks can say that the Metzias HaDvarim is each time you press the gear, it's a new flame. So my sense is not true. Okay, anyway.
Has any person discussed the concern of the machshel by requiring a shinui? In some cases, you might be machshel people in the case where they should
really be hard. No, so that's what I'm saying. That you have to, a person has to size up. These are for situations that are clearly the type of people that push that. How does he set in count? In the chanami, vaz and vaz, if there's any chashash, then you don't do these things. 100%.
It seems that we're being very strict on people that have the problem with themselves, but ambulance drivers and doctors and things like that.
What are they going to do? They have to get to where they have to go. The ambulance driver, every time he gets a call, he's going to call a cab to take him to the ambulance. It's not going to help. So these are all talking about situations where it's able to be done. If you're not able to do it, then you don't do it. You have to just do whatever you have to be done for people.
You shouldn't call
Hatzalah for your lads. It depends whether it's a real emergency or not.
If it's a real emergency, you shouldn't call Hatzalah for your lads.
Why should you bother Hatzalah to take you to the hospital if you can have a guy take you? It depends. You have to be very careful. You should never misuse Hatzalah. You should never misuse any ambulance. Every time when my son got hurt a couple of weeks ago, so he was bleeding so much, we couldn't figure out where he was bleeding from, so we just called 911 just couldn't figure out what to do. So we live in Bergenfeld, it's not Solomon. So first the police came. So when the police came, so we started to we realized finally we had the bleeding under control. So they said, do you really want an ambulance? So my son got so excited, yeah, you really want it. He was so excited to drive him back in the ambulance. So at which point I told the police, I said, if he is so excited to go in the ambulance, it's a simon rubin that he doesn't really need an ambulance. So I said, I think let the ambulance guys do something that's more important. He was very disappointed. So I don't want to tell him next time, but whatever. Anyway. So up until now, we've been talking primarily about cholah she'esh bei sakana. So we have to move on to the next category, cholah she'ein bei sakana. You have a person who is sick, but clearly there's no rescue, there's no threat to life whatsoever. So this individual has a whole different series of halachas. So we're going to try to talk really on two different levels here about cholah she'ein bei sakana. First of all, what are the heter? What are you allowed to do for cholah she'ein bei sakana? And then once you figure out what you're allowed to do, so then we're going to try to define precisely what a cholah she'ein bei sakana is, some really common day dish of a cholah she'ein bei sakana.
Can you just maybe give of examples of what a
cholah she'esh b'sakana. Okay, a couple of classic examples of cholah she'esh b'sakana. Person's having chest pains or something. That's that could potentially be a cholah she'esh b'sakana. I don't mean the guy just lifted weights and now he's complaining of a muscle pull or something. I mean a case where it looks like there's a potential that maybe a heart attack is clearly a cholah she'esh b'sakana. Uncontrolled bleeding is a cholah she'esh b'sakana. A broken arm, a broken leg is a potential cholah she'esh b'sakana. Because it could, the bone can cut into an artery, can cause the person an internal bleeding. That's a potential cholah she'esh bei sakana. If a person has an unexplained high fever, that's also cholah she'esh bei sakana.
How high?
That's a question. The yes, Rav Moshe, how high is high? So Rav Moshe, she wasn't a doctor. Rav Moshe said, that's 102. He said, that's cholah she'esh bei sakana. So the doctors say, it depends. It depends what the context is. And if you have a person, let's say if you have a baby with a fever, 102, an infant, it's a 3-week-old baby, 102, that's pikuach nefesh. But if you have a kid, say, the kid's guy just came back from the doctor, he's got bronchitis, you know exactly what he's got 102 fever, and he's on antibiotics, so that's not really a cholah she'esh bei sakana. But if you have, let's say, somebody who has 102 fever, and they have other strange symptoms, let's say the person is throwing up violently, and the person is wobbling. If you have other symptoms that seem to point that there's something potentially serious going on here, so that's, of course, a chashash of cholah she'esh bei sakana. So fever is in and of itself. Even a fever lower than 100, let's say for a person, say for a diabetic who gets fever, so that could potentially be even more serious. An older person gets fever. So again, fever in and of itself is not necessarily the kevei. It has to be part of the general picture. Again, obviously, we're not doctors here. So a person has to, if there's any chashash whatsoever, one always goes lakula in this, one always errs on the side of caution. Those are some common, some common examples. Again, seichel yosher, use common sense as to what's a chashash of.
What about something like taking a temperature? That literally
is a very high fever. Yeah, so like this, the taking a temperature itself is not really also a job. Taking a temperature is maybe medida, maybe it's a violation of the issue of measuring, maybe not. Shlomo Zalman held it wasn't even called measuring because it's nothing tangible that you're measuring. But even if he holds it is measuring, it's measuring b'machom chelos mutter. So you're not taking a temperature unless the person's already sick. And usually, unless a person feels normal, you don't have to take his temperature. If you have an indication that something wrong, he's already a cholah she'ein bei sakana at least. So it would be mutter. It's mutter to take temperature on Shabbos. So the question is it even necessary to take temperature? Depends, but usually you can tell. Usually the thermometer, it's not the kaveh at all. You can put the old style away, put your hands on the kid's head. You can tell when he's got 101, he's got 104.
Someone has to go on the ambulance or something. Does a parent or a friend want to go?
Yeah, this is an important thing that when a patient has to go to the hospital, so absolutely somebody's mechuyav to go with him because unfortunately, we know that a lot of mistakes, a lot of mix-ups happen in hospitals. So there has to be somebody responsible going along for two reasons. Someone to monitor the situation, and number two, to give psychological, just to help out a little bit. This is a child, send a child to the ambulance himself, they'll arrest you for child neglect. So of course you have to go along. Or let's say a woman's in labor, so the husband's going to say, oh, you have the baby, I'm going to make the shalom zachar, so you can't do that. So obviously you have to go along. Right, you're right, but the psychological issues are also chashash pikuach nefesh, the woman's going to be terrified to go to the hospital by herself, rightfully so. So of course that's going to impact on our physical condition. Psychological issues are pikuach nefesh. I had, unfortunately, a couple of serious shailas in the last couple of weeks. about certain psychological issues that mamish touch upon the real issues of people of nefesh. There was a therapist who asked me a short time back that he had one of his patients was suicidal, and he was basically the person who would talk to him. Whenever the person would get down, would get depressed, would get into some issue, he would pick up the phone and call this particular therapist and schmooze with him. He was his mamish's first line of a response. So this person asked me whether he's allowed to answer the phone on Shabbos. I said, absolutely. He said, you have to answer the phone. That's the chashash to Ruach Nefesh. Then he asked me, unfortunately, this particular patient was later hospitalized, and he would call sometimes from the hospital. The question is that the Ruach Nefesh? Here the hospital is watching him, so he's probably not going to commit suicide in the, he's being, you know, under, he's in a psychiatric ward, so they're on top of him, Yom Valayla, but he wants to talk to the therapist. So is he allowed to, this therapist, this from guy, allowed to pick up the phone on Shabbos for that? So I thought there was probably also a mutter. I said, if I'm not convinced that picking up the phone is a misadereis, a misadereabonim, maybe according to the Magen Mishnah, maybe that's called tzarcho. I said, maybe. I said, listen, I don't want to be the one responsible to say, let's say, you know, the doctors in the hospital watching him, Yom V'Layel, but him coming out, something could go wrong. So I thought that if a person is hospitalized for, at the point, so far gone that he's hospitalized for chashash of suicide, he's mamash achalash eshbeh sakonim. So I thought that anything that's going to alleviate his condition to answer a phone, probably not a misadereis, probably not a misadereabonim. So I thought that was okay. So that's something very important to have to take into consideration, psychological needs in terms of pikuach nefesh.
Talking about taking temperatures, I assume you're talking about the old-fashioned.
Yeah. You should try to avoid taking the digital ones, unless we'll show that there may be a way to do that derech hetzer also.
Regards to the machlokes, the Rambam and Ramban.
Yeah.
So according to the Rambam, if somebody breaks an arm, or not if somebody was in labor, you could always open, pick up the phone and
you
could
do things normally, yeah, according to the Rambam. That was what you were
saying. Get in a car and drive.
Yeah, it's not a good idea even according to the Rambam, because if you're in the Rambam, you're not going to be able to park the car. Right. There could be other things that are going to be necessary to be done which are not part of the Tzarech HaCholah. So the driving is always a bad idea.
Right, but just in the case where you call a cab service and you have money, do the other potentially suiting that way, like driving yourself?
Yeah,
you
I wouldn't try. I'd rather pick up a phone than drive. So what exactly are you permitted to do let's try to get a few, just a little bit more into this next topic, and maybe we'll take some questions, a little bit more questions at the end. Is that a better format? No, that was worth to the coordinator.
Good format.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see. When I get tired, I'll take questions. So comes Allah and tells us that not only there's a chala she'esh per sakana, but there's a chala she'ein by sakana as well. So what are you permitted to do for a chala she'ein by sakana? So the one thing you're for sure allowed to do for a chala she'ein by sakana is a merely akum. That's mamash hatagom, but the Gemara says, Amu v'nachi v'yaytech for a chala she'ein by sakana. What about other yisurim d'rabbanon? So yisurim d'raisa clearly you're not allowed to do. What about yisurim d'rabbanon? So the Rambam seemed to assume that all yisurim d'rabbanon are mutter also. At least one version of the Rambam. That the Chavim lifted all the Yisurim Durabbanon b'makom chavim she'ein by sakana. The Rais is no, but all the Durabbanons are mutter. And we don't really paskin like this Rambam. The Shulchan Aruch quotes paskins like the Ramban, and the Ramban says it's not quite true. Not all the Yisurim Durabbanon were lifted for chavim she'ein by sakana. Only certain ones. What are the certain ones? So one is Amir Liakom. The other is things done by Yedei Shinoi. The Yisur Durabbanon of Shinoi, so it was permitted to be done for chavim she'ein by sakana. So there was a machlokes with the poskim. What exactly did the Ramban mean? And this is important because the Shulchan Aruch paskim is like the Ramban. So one reading of the Ramban was that isurim derabbanan that are done by shinoi amuter for chala she'ein by sakana. I mean something which is itself only misses the Rabbanan. If you do it by yedei shinoi, it's like a double derabbanan. So to do a derabbanan by yedei shinoi is muter for chala she'ein by sakana. But to do a deraisa by yedei shinoi, forget. Do a deraisa by shinoi. So we paskim is also. That's how the Shulchan Aruch seems to present the Shittas of Ramban. Another Achronim, later Achronim points out that if you look in the Ramban himself, in the Sefer Torah of Adam, that's not what he says. But the Ramban himself says not the way the Shulchan Aruch is quoting the Ramban. The Ramban himself says that Ibn Yisurim Deraisa, Donai De Shinoi, Amutar Fechel Shein Be Sakona. So in the Ikra Din, we have a right to pass in that way against the Shulchan Aruch. In the Ikra Din, if one is stuck, so then for Chol Shein Be Sakona, so one is allowed to do a really Akum, and one is allowed to do even assume deraisa ayidei shinoi, but to do a nisa derabbanan outright in a normal manner, so one should try to avoid following the shittas of Rambam. The Chayyadam writes in Mishabur Klotzos LaHalacha that let's say a person's mamish stuff, and there's absolutely no way to do it, there's no going around, and there's no way in the world to do that. The only way to solve this Chalash Einbeck Takanis problem is Al Yedei doing an Issa Dirabbanan via Dayan. So the Chayyadam writes, Mikveh, then you're allowed to do it. That's, in effect, we all fall back on the Rambam, that the push comes to shove, and there's no other way out, so then even via Dayan is Mutter. But that's the Yaitzeh Miraklal. The normal protocol of Halach is that you try to get a guy, and if you can't get a guy, then you try to do it with a shinoi, even though it's an issa deraisa, a shinoi, that would be acceptable.
So shinoi deraisa would be more hal than
an issa derabbanan outright, right? Because whatever's done a shinoi, that's like so far moved from being a deraisa. It's such a lashunadik thing, so that's a lower level of issa derabbanan. That's what the Rambam is holding.
And then you hear it the other way.
Yeah, Tosis writes in a lot of places that Ein Ladam is Gezeris Chacham Zilla Zeh. It's very hard to bring Klolim in this area. But that's what the Rambam says, and that's how that's what the later Chum Nikvital and others, Sum Mahalocha, that the Ikra Din, you can either do it Aide Goya, you can do it Aide Shina. This is a very, very good heter to be aware of, but this is many, many, many shilas come up, but if you just plug in this sheet of the Ramban, especially the Egle Tal is reading the Ramban, but we're presenting it against the Shulchan Aruch, so then a lot of things are going to end up being mutter. It's a common child that happens. The person's in the hospital, and they're, as we all know, it's not so easy to sometimes get a nurse's attention in the hospital. Sometimes you have to press a little buzzer. The person wants to get a nurse's attention. Why? Because he wants to prop up the bed a little bit. He wants to, or let's say he himself wants to prop up the bed with the other button. He wants to get the nurse to a little bit thirsty. Things which are not, nothing's going to happen. So let's assume not like the Magen Mishnah. Even though it's Tzarach Yecholah, nothing's going to happen terrible. So is he allowed to press the button? So pressing the button is some kind of a usage of electricity. So is that permissible on Shabbos or not? Again, assuming that it's only in Yanim of Ein Basakana. So if he's in the hospital, anyone who's in the hospital, so he's at least a Cholosh Ein Basakana. If not, he shouldn't be there. So he's either Yesh Basakana or Ein Basakana. So even on a Tzad, that right now he's already recuperating, he's not really, what he needs right now is not Yesh Basakana. So he can press the button if he does it derech shinoi. So he should be instructed to press with the back of his hand, his elbow or something, to press the button, either to get the non-Jewish nurse's attention or to press the button to prop up the bed to make himself more comfortable. So all of these things are tzarchei chayla she'ein by sakwana, and ayde shinoi, they're all going to be permissible. There's a very, very common child that comes up concerning babies. We all know babies tend to get sick fairly often. They get this get these bad coughs. So usually the doctor will tell you to put on some kind of these vaporizers, humidifiers, all these different kunsim. So very often these kinds of contraptions, so they'll help the baby breathe a little bit. But very often you can't leave them on for the whole 24 hours. Again, I'm not a mumch in all the technical details of this, but you can't keep them on for so long, and apparently some of them can't be linked up to Shabbos clock. So they have to be turned on and off during the course of the day. So the mice and the baby needs it, so what do you do? So maybe you have a goy in the house, you have a goy next door, so matois, then have the goy do it. Baby's sick, baby's coughing, that's a chelosh ember sakana for sure, maybe even yesh ber sakana. So have a goy do it in shayim. What if there's no goy available? What if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, as very often the case is, you have to turn it on and off in the middle of the night, so you can't wake up a goy 2 o'clock in the morning, so what do you do? So then I think you have to fall back on this Ramban. So it's a chelosh ember sakana. So you're allowed to do it there. So you have to plug the thing in, either usually plugged in, just turn on the button, off the button, whatever it is, whatever is necessary for this mechanism to work properly would be mutter if it's done Ayyadei Shinoi. Somebody called me the shala this last Friday that they had one of these kinds of contraptions, and again, I'm not a mumch in all these different types of things, but apparently this particular contraption, it wasn't just pressing a button, it was a whole to-do, and they said they couldn't figure out any way to do it there. It wasn't shy to do it there. So there's a possible late, according to some poskim, to invoke what's called Shnayim Shasa'uha. The Shnayim Shasa'uha means if you have two people do something together, two people are holding on to the thing together, doing the malacha together, let's say two people are holding a pencil together, two people are carrying an object together, so the Mishnah says that's potter. Shnayim Shasa'uha is potter. So the question is, does that mean that it's an Issa Dirabbanan? Usually potter in the Shabbos means potter of al-Osur, means also mit Dirabbanan. That's how the Rambam seems to say. That's what the Chayyadim paskin. The Shnayim Shasa'uha was only Issa Dirabbanan. And the Mekor Chayyim holds that Shnayim Shasa'uha is potter min HaTorah, but it's an Issa Dirabbanan. It's like a Chasishir or something. We spoke about this in Masechet Kedushin, Daf Mem Gimel this week. So by Shnayim Ochtim Masachim, Meshchut Echutz, that's where we're going to raya from. So this is an important shaila lamaisa. Means how would we view a shnayim shasa'uha? Let's say mamish push comes to shove, there's no other shinui to do. Can you invoke shnayim shasa'uha? So according to those poskim, will say a shnayim shasa'uha is only an issa derabbanan. So here we're talking about a chayla she'ein by sakana. So And they said they're above it. At the end of the day, you're allowed to do this if they're above it. There's no other way of doing it. But even the normal way you're allowed to do this if they're above the chayyad and paskin. So those who hold the shnayim shasu'ah is only this if they're above it would permit it. Those who hold the shnayim shasu'ah is a chashal of a deraisa. Would be a nisa deraisa. Nisa deraisa is finished. So you wouldn't be permitted to do it. That would be a shayla. So Rabbi Yisrael is not a lahokil in this particular shayla because I wasn't convinced that it wasn't real pikuach nefesh. The baby was a couple of weeks old. And they were coughing away, so that could be potentially maybe a real terror, a real pikuach nefesh. So the tziruch, the chayodim held that it's, and the pashas, the rambam is like the chayodim, that shnayim shasu'ah was only nisa derabanan. So I thought we had ground, b'shas avcha, gadol like this, that there's no other way to do a shinui to permit actually doing this. It wasn't feasible to have a guy come in 2 o'clock in the morning and turn on and off this contraption. You have other common examples of doing Yisurim Derabbanan, either of Eli Yaakov or other things like a day for a Chalash Eim B'Sakana. Very often that situation where a person goes to the hospital on Shabbos and now they're treated ready. They got the treatment ready. So the woman goes to the hospital on labor and turns out false labor. So now the question is she mechuyev to stay in the hospital for the duration of Shabbos? So we know there is a whole sugya in the Gemara, the poster about the Kira Sofa Mishum Tchilason, about under what circumstances if a person is going for Piguach Nefesh permitted to return, but the pashas that doesn't apply to the patient himself, because that svar, if it exists at all, so it only exists, let's say, for an outsider, because if you don't let him return, then he may not go back the next time. And even that's a big question, whether how far that really goes. Does that really matter if somebody actually drives back from the hospital and shops? That's a very, very serious question. But for the patient himself, for Makoro, once you're in the hospital, then you have to stay put, they discharge you, so stay in the lobby. So the question is, maybe, although we can't let you drive home yourself, maybe you can have a goy drive you home. You probably didn't have your car there in the first place, so maybe a goy could drive you back. So the question is, could we invoke the heter of Isura of Amir Yaakov for a Chalosh and Yimbar Sakana? So I think it depends on what your medical position is at that point. So let's say it's very often you had a baby, you had to take the baby to the hospital on Shabbos, and now they check you out, give you x-rays, give you the test, or whatever they tell you, everything's fine. Go home and put the kid to sleep for a little bit. So to have the baby hang around in the hospital lobby for the duration of Shabbos, that's mamish tzarche cholosh ein b'sakana. You're going to become a cholosh. Yesh b'sakana. You're going to go crazy. That's going to be very, very detrimental to the baby's health. You expect the mother to sit there with the baby for another 10 hours. So that's a cholosh ein b'sakana. So a cholosh ein b'sakana, really, Yaakov is mutter. So you're allowed to have a goyish driver. Goyish care, take you home. So that would be okay. That's a tzarche cholosh ein b'sakana where Amir Yaakov is going to be mutter. Let's say it's not that. Let's say it's a woman who was in labor, false labor. She comes to the hospital. Now it's they tell her at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Listen, go home. You're not gonna have a baby for another couple of days or so. So Shabbos is over at 5 o'clock. So she says, "Oh, I'm gonna drive home. And we're gonna get a guy to drive somewhere." What kind of tzarich is that? So sit around the hospital ward for another in the lobby for another hour. What's the big deal? We'll be quiet. But to the guys to go down mincha, so down biyachidus nu. So that's not a heter to go get a cab to drive on Shabbos. So they should just stay put for a little while. So again, each case has to be sized up. So sometimes to go back is mutter. Sometimes that's tzarche chayla. Sometimes not. Somebody called me with a wacky shayla. I think it was this past. I think it was last Pesach. That the woman was in her ninth month, and they were going away to a hotel for Yom Tov, which is in itself probably not the smartest thing to be doing, since the hotel was 3-hour drive from where she was supposed to give birth. But whatever, I didn't, you know, part of the rabbi's job is to know what to ask, and sometimes the rabbi's job is to know what not to ask. But whatever it was, the wife said, "We're going to this hotel." So the question was, she asked people, "What if she goes into labor?" They said, "You go into labor, so then you have to, you're paying $20,000 to go in Pesach, so pay another $200 to one of the guys in there, arrange in advance, he should drive you for 3 hours back to Columbia, wherever you give him birth to." So then she wanted to know, well, can she go back? And let's say she's forced labor, would she be permitted to go back? Because it's good to go back. That's a much more serious shot, because that involves going to Chutz L'Tchum. That's not just a merely Yaakov, that's for you now to go back to Chutz L'Tchum. So what was the Tzvar L'Hokel? So she said to me, but it's the tzorach of the other kids, because she's leaving her other kids with her in-laws in the hotel. So she thinks it's going to be pikuach nefesh for the in-laws that they're going to drive the grandparents crazy over 2 days in Yom Tov. So could she go back for that? I don't know. Thought about it a lot. I can identify with the problem, but I said, I don't know. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. So anyway, Baruch Hashem, she had a baby at the Yom Tov and responded to any case. So, yeah.
If the false alarm or if they say ready to leave, and it passed on a Friday night. So then, they could wait. I mean, they could wait in the lobby for the next 20 hours.
So the question is, how much of a tzar? So maybe the woman is going to be so uncomfortable doing that. She's in the ninth month already. So maybe that will be a gather of chalosh ein by sakana, which immediately happened with each case has to be sized up. Maybe able to walk somewhere, which is within reason. Yeah, each case has to be looked at. So just time to say, well, mitzvah has to go back and to have a guy drive us. It's a regular merely akum shayla. So merely akum and makam chayla. It's looked at. If it's a chalosh ein by sakana, that's okay. There is another application of a merely akum and makam chayla, which is also becoming more and more of a common shayla. Let's say you have a son of Yontif, especially when you have like a 3-day Yontif. The woman has a baby, we take a Thursday for the Shabbos, the woman has a baby so Wednesday afternoon or something. So now she's not, well, usually then, now they'll throw you out after a day or two if everything is normal. So now the time of discharge, the mother and the baby could be discharged on Friday. So it's Yontif, it's Shabbos. It's, how are you going to go home on Yontif? You have to drive back home. So there are some rabbanim, and I think that they're right, who permit them to be discharged, permit them to have a goy, drive them back. Why? What's the tzarech? Because why can't they just stay in the hospital for another day? So the fact that the insurance won't pay for your Shmir Shabbos, that in and of itself is not a svara. But the reason why it's detrimental to stay in the hospital for another day, because we know that the most dangerous place in the world to be is a hospital, because that's where most people get sick. I kid you not, but that because of all the germs, all the infections in the hospital, the worst place for a person who doesn't have to be there to be is inside a hospital, especially for newborns. So part of the reason to get the newborns out of the hospital as quick as possible is because you don't want them to be exposed to all those things that are inside the wonderful sterile environment of the hospital. So if I've heard this from doctors, and I think that this is the correct psak, that if a woman is discharged from the hospital on Shabbos, or maybe that's a svara for, I don't know what the hospital lobby looks like also, I don't know, maybe it's a certain svara, I'm not a immunologist, I don't know how far the germs go, but for the baby to stay in the newborn nursery for an extra day or two could potentially be detrimental to its health. Therefore, it's a good idea to be discharged, so you have a guy drive you and try and you're permitted to go home by the akam. Again, being careful about all the other things that we spoke about, getting into the car, out of the car, etc. The mother's allowed to go with the baby also. You don't have to send the baby into care alone. So you're allowed to.
The mother
needs
so much
yeshiva psychiatrist. Oh, yeah, maybe. So now that we get a little bit of an idea of what you're allowed to do for a chadash ein b'sakana, merely akam, things like this, shinoi. What exactly constitutes a chola she'ein b'sakana? What are some classic examples of a chola she'ein b'sakana? So the poskim discussed a term which is called nachol mishkav. If a person is sick enough that they have to lie in bed, that constitutes a chola she'ein b'sakana, and all these hetarim would apply. Tzarchei tinok, little needs for little children, is considered to also be a chola she'ein b'sakana. How old does the child have to be? There are different opinions in the poskim. But it's hard to give an outright number, but clearly infants, toddlers, 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, those are clearly begedeh cholosh ein b'sakana. Maybe a little bit even later than that probably is cholosh ein b'sakana. Whatever need that they have, that quickly speaking, I think going would be mutter. Sometimes you have a situation of older people, could also potentially just a person's feeble, you know, doesn't have a necessarily particular chola. Person overall is a very weak type of a person, so that could also potentially be a chola she'ein b'sakana. However, there are certain people who don't necessarily qualify atidin as a chola she'ein b'sakana. Some people who, although they may be a little cranky, but they don't necessarily qualify as a chola she'ein b'sakana. That's what the poskim say explicitly, the woman who is pregnant or a woman who is nursing is not really a chola she'ein b'sakana. So therefore, there is no heter gomer just to do everything. Woman's pregnant, all the rabbanim are mutter, that's absolutely not true. Woman's nursing, she may be uncomfortable, there's no heter to say that, well, all the rabbanim are mutter. There may be certain things that are mutter, but as a general rule, muberes and menikos are not labeled as even a chola she'ein b'sakana. That's important not only in the Shabbos, it's important in the Tainis as well. But the Gemara tells us in Maseches Pesachim that Mu'ubaros and Menikos, women who are pregnant, women who are nursing, are obviously Mechuyavot, they're obviously obligated to fast in Yom Kippur and Kippur's Deraisa, unless they have some particular condition. Again, each case is different, each case has to be analyzed. Sometimes there are complications in pregnancy that do require a woman to eat even on Yom Kippur. But putting aside those complications, so the general rule is that a woman who's pregnant, a woman who's nursing, fasts in Yom Kippur. And the Gemara says in Pesachim that a woman who's pregnant, a woman who's nursing, fasts on Tisha B'Av as well. Because Tisha B'Av although it's a Nisa Derabbanan, but just because you're pregnant nursing, that does not pass you to do a Nisa Derabbanan. In contrast to a Chayla, let's say a person is a Nafal Mishka, a person is running 102 fever, it's very, very sick, but that's Yeshtesakana. So for him to fast is going to be very, very difficult for him. So then he's not mechuyav to fast on Tisha B'Av because the chol she'ein b'sakana doesn't have to keep the din derabanan of Tisha B'Av. He's not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur. He's not allowed to even eat pachas because she's on Yom Kippur unless he's mamish chayla chashash if he has b'sakana. But to violate Tisha B'Av, so even if it's a chol she'ein b'sakana is mutar, but a woman who is pregnant or a woman in nursing is not even a chol she'ein b'sakana. The only thing that the pregnant women or the nursing women are permitted to do, they're permitted to eat on the other tiniest, according to the Iker Adin. Everyone follows this, but the Iker Adin, they're permitted to eat on some Gedalia, on Shulchan Aruch, Talmud, etc., because those tiniest are not even the Rabbanim. Those tiniest are Bekeres Minig, Bekeres Kabbalah for Tibur, so the Tibur was never Makabal from Mubaris and Minikos to fast in those days. So there are three different levels in terms of tiniest Bahalacha. There's Yom Kippur, which you have to be a Chelesh Yesh by Sakana to eat on. There's Tisha B'Av, which you have to be a Chelesh Ein by Sakana to eat on. So Mubaris and Minika don't qualify for that. And to eat on the other tiniest, so you don't even have to be a Chelesh Ein by Sakana. Even if you're lower level, the Mubaris and Minikos would also be permitted in Ikra Din to eat on the other tiniest. So Kivega writes that he thinks that if you have a Tisha B'Av, which is Nidcha, so then it has the level of the status of the lower level tanya. It's just a field from the whole complicated din masach teruvin. So the kivega paskins that if you have a muveris and manika is permitted to eat on a Tisha B'Av nidcha. Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, Tisha B'Av to Sunday. So then they would be permitted to eat on that. So a couple of years ago, I discovered that it wasn't just me. One of the people who discovered that Rabbi Kivega tucked away in nidcha Tisha B'Av. So I told one woman about that, and one friend tells another. The entire week before Tisha B'Av, I had 30 women who were pregnant who called me to know, is that really true? I said, that's what Rabbi Kivega says. So he says it, so he says it. So you want to follow him, that's fine with me. So, Kachava, yeah. Another question? No? Okay. So a woman who's pregnant is not really a Chol She'ein B'Sakana. But a woman who just had a baby is a Chol She'ein B'Sakana up until 30 days. So the first couple of days, you have to birth. Mark says the first 3 days, sometimes even the first week, depending on what our particular needs are. But after a week, she's not a chol she'ein by sakana, unless she has some very serious complications. But she's at least a chol she'ein by sakana. So therefore, for the first month after childbirth, so then we would treat her with all the kulos of a chol she'ein by sakana. So we would permit her to do Amiro Yaakov would be outright mutter for her, to do things like Shinoi would be permissible for her as well. And therefore, the Shulchan Aruch paskens with Tisha B'Av that a woman who gave birth within 30 days is not required to fast on Tisha B'Av for the same rationale that Kol Zman that she's within 30 days of the birth. That's called the Chol She'ein B'Sakana. And basically, the Rabbanan, those certain Rabbanan, we're going to lift for her. There is a certain Issa the Rabbanan that we're making for a Chol She'ein B'Sakana. Even though generally we're not matir all Yisroel Derabbanan for Chol She'ein B'Sakana, only matir mil Yachal or Shinoi, but one of the other Yisroel Derabbanan that we're matir for Chol She'ein B'Sakana, that's the issue of taking medicine on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Shabbos in many places that the Chama made a gezeirah with Derabbanan, that you're not allowed to take medicine on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Gezeirah mishum shechitas samamanim, you may come to grind up the herb, the spices, to prepare the medication, even though we don't usually prepare medication that way. You know, there was one of the Acharayim, Rav Chaim Noah was of the opinion that the whole issur of taking medicine doesn't apply to this man hazeh, but it's usually not assumed that way. We assume that there is an issur derabanan in this man hazeh to take medicine. So that issur derabanan does not apply to a chodesh she'ein by sakana, as long as the person is not nafal mishkan, as long as they're sick enough to have to lay in bed. So that's an exception to the rule. Why is that? Manishtana, the issur of taking medicine from other issurim derabanan that were not ma'atir outright for a chodesh she'ein by sakana. So the Rav Zalz writes that the issur of taking medicine is a very kal issur derabanan. How do you know that it's very kal? Because it's mutter for a healthy person to take medicine. If a person is a bari, there's nothing wrong with him, he just stopped taking medicine for kicks, so then it's mutter for him to take the medicine on Shabbos also. You have a little bit of a strange situation, so who's not allowed to take medicine exactly? So if you're sick, so then you're allowed to take medicine. So the din of chayil is zaychel yisad rabba. If you're a bari, so we're not concerned, you're going to chop up the herbs because you don't really need them anyway. So it's mutter for you to take medicine. So who exactly can't take medicine? So the answer is someone who's right smack in between, someone who's a michosh bi'alma, someone who has just a little cranky, has a headache, a stomach ache, is a foot hurts, those kinds of things, the allergies, those kinds of things are what's called michosh bi'alma. they're not even a chayla she the zicha not a chayla she yesh b'sakana. They're not even a chayla she ain b'sakana. The guy's not a bari. He's right smack in the middle. He's a michash b'yama, which is 99% of the time we take medicine. So those kinds of medications are prohibited to be taken on Shabbos and Yom Tov. We pass him even b'sman hazeh.
What about daily allergy medicine that you know you're fine.
Yeah, so daily allergy medications like this. The Gemara has some kind of discussion about a medication that you've taken for a few days before Shabbos, whether you're permitted to continue taking it on Shabbos. So many posts can maintain that means if it's a type of a medication that if you stop taking it on Shabbos, your condition is going to deteriorate. Let's say, for example, antibiotics. So we all know that if you take antibiotics for a few days and then you stop taking it before you're actually healed, then you're going to get worse off. Why is that? So again, we're not in medical school, but I think the reason is like this, that the antibiotic comes, not my sfar, this is what happens. The antibiotic comes and it kills off the bacteria. There are a lot of different bacteria. There are some bacteria who are half dead to begin with. There are some bacteria who are mamish, the strong guys. So the ones who are half dead, so they get bumped off in the first day or two. So those are the half the bacteria, so feel a little bit better. So after one, two, three days of antibiotic, you usually feel a lot better. The only thing is that the shtaka guys are still floating around in there. And what happens? When you stop the antibiotics and the shtaka guys are still around, and what do? So they makayim shuta kimashmo pruvu milas aretz. So then they start to multiply. So now you have 20 billion of the shtaka bacteria rather than the 20 billion of the half dead ones around last week. That's why we all know when you're lazy and you don't finish the antibiotic, so not only will you get sick, but you will get sicker than you were the first time around. I think basically that's the lumbus behind what happens. Any guys in medical school here? Any pre-med? Anyone here took high school bio? Okay, anyone? Good, okay, that's basically I think what happened. Give or take. I always have a cloud goal, whenever I say shit about a bathroom, I say anything which has to do with medicine, so I always scan the room to see if there are any doctors. Any doctors, and I'm very careful what I say. If I don't see any doctors who I know, then I just five smarters, whatever. But you can't do that anymore, because every shia's online, so I can say shia now. Guy in Arizona tells me that I said a wrong medical smart, so it's always very embarrassing. Anyway, but I think this is give or take correct. So therefore, the din is that to take antibiotic on Shabbos is mutter. If you start an antibiotic before Shabbos, you're permitted to continue it through throughout Shabbos. That we assume is mutter. But other kinds of medications, the allergy medicine. I also take my allergy medicine. If you take allergy medicine and you miss a day, so you may feel miserable that day, but it's not going to really throw you back. It's not going to ruin it for you. So therefore, that kind of medication is a problem. There are other kind of medication that if you miss a day, it's going to be a problem. A woman's on birth control, so again, assuming obviously that she's permitted to be on that for whatever reason, she's permitted to be on birth control, so she would be permitted to take the birth control pill on Shabbos also, because to miss a day is going to throw everything off as well. So those kinds of medication, antibiotic, those kinds of things, you can continue to take on Shabbos. Other kinds of medication, unless you're a chodesh ein b'sakana, or unless you're going to become a chodesh ein b'sakana, let's say the person, he knows himself, he has a little bit of a headache, but he knows his head is going to turn to a full-blown migraine in the next hour if he doesn't jump the gun and take the Tylenol. So that's pashut, that's mutter. You're not mechuyav to become a cholish ein b'sakana. If you know that you're going to become one, so you're allowed to do whatever's mutter to prevent that from happening. That's based on a psak of Marami Rittenberg. Maram said that, let's say it's very cold in the house on Shabbos, and the only way to heat up the house is to throw more logs into the fire, so you're allowed to ask a guy to do that. Why is that? It's merely Akhamana Deraisa. So the Ma'am Wurttemberg says, I call Chayla Meitzel Tzina, that people get sick when it's cold. Everyone's healthy now, but they're going to catch cold in a little while. So says the Ma'am, preventative medicine is, what's it called? An ounce of prevention is worth something or other?
Pounds of cure.
Good. Okay, very good. So that's what the Ma'am Wurttemberg gives the Mechavim to that also. He says, I call Chayla Meitzel Tzina means you're allowed to do whatever, Yisum Drabbanon, the Yaakov, Shinu, whatever they are, whatever's allowed to be done for a tzarech of a Bechayla Shein B'Sakana, you're allowed to do in advance to prevent becoming. So that's where the Ma'am Wurttemberg Pasha should permit a person who knows themselves who can become knocked out with the migraine headache, if they sense it's already coming on, they would be permitted to take the medication in advance. But if a person gets a regular normal headache, a little regular stomach ache, allergies a little bit, so those kinds of things, Pasha is one should not be taking medication.
Medicine only needs to be taken once a day for a chol shem b'sakana, so it's better to do
it
like right before Shabbos.
So depends what kind of medication. Let's say a person's on thyroid medication. So with thyroid medication, you just take once a day. So you should try to take it. Try to take it before Shabbos and take it on Shabbos. If you're able to maneuver in a situation, it doesn't interfere with taking the medication. If a person's on, let's say, some heart medication, you have to take it 3 times a day or something. That's a chol shem b'sakana potentially.
Most doctors disagree that the
Well, that is the one.
No, so you know,
you should try to take this the same time every day. It doesn't mean to the same minute every day. Let's say you one night. I usually take my entire medication. I usually take before I go to sleep. So why do I take before I go to sleep? Because that way I avoid the Shabbos problem. So it means I can take it on say Shabbos. I don't have to take a Shabbos morning. I could take it half the year in the summertime. You take it 8 o'clock. So my immediately I can go to sleep at 8 o'clock. So I can take it at 8 o'clock. So even in the wintertime, you take it at 4 o'clock. Thyroid medication is a type of medication, unless a person has a very, very serious thyroid problem. And if you miss a day here and there, it's not gonna be the end of the world. Do you have medical school?
No, I'm just hyperthyroid.
Oh, okay. So it depends on this. Again, it depends on the type of situation. But it's a type of medication that will drastically be altered by taking at different times. And then you have to figure out whether there's enough tzaras to take it in Shabbos. The medicine you can play around with a little bit. Birth control pills are a type of medication you can play around with. You play around with that, so that causes, you know, those causes of nida problems when you start to come from, you know, Shabbos, and you don't want to take it this time, that time, the other time, so then you end up with more serious problems. Derech Shina is a question about how exactly you're going to do that. That's a big machlokes of the poskim. It's a complex machlokes of Moshe and Shmuel about how to read it in Gemara and Masechta Shabbos about whether it's mutter to take it and put it into the food or not. It's a shaila whether you're allowed to do it. You may have to put it in the food from before Shabbos. Putting in the food from before Shabbos may ruin the validity of the medicine. That's a little bit tricky. The Michash B'Alma, I would just live with the Michash B'Alma. There's some poskim will make to put it into chop it into food from beforehand.
It
means if you know if it's, I know it's going to be a michush on every week I have a michush because I don't take my allergy pills. So though there are some possible makes, if you can put it into food from before Shabbos.
What do you do?
What do I personally do? I sneeze on Shabbos. So I don't take my allergy medication on Shabbos. But there are some who are make, or some possible make, or put the pill into, mix it into applesauce from before Shabbos or something, and then make sure you're the one who eats the applesauce, not one of your kids. Yeah, there are some folks who don't make it. You have to check with the doctors or the pharmacy whether that ruins the potency of the pill. You can't take responsibility for any medical issue. Just take responsibility for the halachic side of the story. There is a common child, this is a little bit about the pregnant women, nursing women. So basically we say that nursing women are not really even chalish aimers like on this. So, one wouldn't be permitted to do certain things for them. Nevertheless, there is a very common shah that comes up, which has its roots already in the Gemara a little bit, and for sure in the Rishon and the Shulchan Aruch. The shah that comes up as follows. Let's say a woman who's nursing, so for a woman to nurse on Shabbos, that's clearly permissible. Sometimes you have a situation where the woman can't nurse for some technical reason. Let's say she's sick, so she's running a fever, so the doctors don't want the baby to be exposed to it, so they don't want her to nurse. Well, let's say she's in the hospital, the baby's in the hospital, whatever the case may be, they're not together for Shabbos. So on the one hand, she has to extract the milk, because if she doesn't extract the milk, she's going to be in terrible, terrible pain. On the other hand, to extract milk manually is a very, very serious shayla. It's a shayla v'deraisa of dosh. Those who weren't with Shabbos last year, choleg, we pass in the chayim mishum dosh. It's talking about a shayla v'deraisa. So you're not allowed to do a deraisa just to avoid tsar, even if it's tsar gadol. So how do you get around this problem? So the Rishonim say that you're allowed to do as follows. You're allowed to do what's called chela v'ibud. You're allowed to extract the milk in such a way that the milk doesn't get saved. You don't use the milk. So very often, let's say a woman goes to work and she happens to be nursing. So the baby's home and she's at work. So what does she do? So most women, they pump. So the hand pump, the modern day electrical pumps. So they'll pump the milk. They'll put it into a little baby bottle. And they'll put the bottle into the freezer and the milk stays for a couple of months. So that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. To do that on Shabbos, that's also in the Torah. Because that's cholev letzorech. You can do it just like milking a cow to drink the milk. You're nursing the mother, you're taking the milk out, extracting the milk to save it, to stick it in the freezer. That's absolutely also in the Torah. But what you are permitted to do is to do what's called cholev ibud. So you have to extract the milk and then throw the milk immediately down the drain. So it's machlokas haposkim about whether it has to be mamish, go from the woman's body, mamish into the drain, or can even be collected in a bottle and be subsequently thrown down the drain. So I tell people they can remake on that. We spoke about this last year in Masechta Shabbos. There are still mohaka like that. And as long as she collects the milk, then it's mamish, she doesn't save it, she doesn't think about saving another, look at it, and throws it right down the drain a second later, that's okay. But some poskim will say to avoid that machlokes, you should put some laundry detergent into the bottom of the bottle. So that makes it mamish chalav le'ibud. I'm very nervous to tell people to do that. The one in a million women is going to forget to clean off the bottle afterwards. I don't want to hear the ramifications. I think one could be makel, just milk them to an infidel bottles, whatever they come for their nursing kit, and just throw it immediately down the drain, and that's considered to be also chalav le'ipus. We had a whole shtickle tzara last year. Remember, we spoke of the Bein HaBarach, but then we had a whole bottom line where we said that was mutter, maker of this. That's an important cooler to be aware of. So again, but to collect the milk for the purpose of actually feeding the baby, so that's absolutely out of the question. Unless it's not meant to go for that, maybe there's nothing else to drink, and there's another way to do it, okay, but that's usually not the case. There are a couple of interesting shadows that come up in terms of related to Chayim and Shabbos. I want to talk about that at the end. We'll take a couple of minutes for questions before we have a mincha. They revolve around the issues of drawing blood on Shabbos. We learned also Masechet Shabbos. We spoke about the Se'arichos, that drawing blood on Shabbos is a very serious problem on Shabbos. Chayvel is an issur d'araisa. Unclear in the Rishon what the issur is. The Rishon talk about maybe it's an issur of Sheikhet, maybe an issur of Dot, an issur of Seveya, different permutations, but at the end of the day, the Mishnah says it's Chayev. The Mishnah says a Chayvel is considered to be Chayev. So drawing blood on Shabbos is clearly out of the question. The problem that comes up is that sometimes drawing blood is part of the things that are necessary for Chola to do. You have certain blood tests, so how do you organize, how do you coordinate blood tests on Shabbos if they're necessary? So it depends what the degree of necessity is. So if it's a Chelashi Yesh B'Sakhona, the guy is just admitted into the hospital, they have to figure out, check his blood to see what's going on. Obviously, there's nothing to discuss. Of course, it's Mutter Lechet Chili, Mechuyf, to draw whatever blood is necessary. But sometimes that's not the case. Sometimes you have a patient, they've been in the hospital already for a couple of days, we know what the problem is, we know everything, and they're drawing a certain degree of routine blood work that's done up to every day in the hospital, and it's not, the results are not going to make or break anything. So it could be the person is a cholesh. In those sakadas, it could be it's important, you know, it's important spirit to know what's going on, but it's probably not going to be a real pikuach nefesh. So it's a cholesh in those sakadas. So the problem is, how do you go about doing this? So if it's a Jew who's going to draw the blood, that's a very serious problem. Unless you're telling that this person is a cholesh yesh by sakadas, and just like kotzach yacholim, and you're back to the Bavi Mishnah story. But if you don't want to rely on that, so what do you do? So we live in America. Most of the people who are drawing the blood are not going to be Jewish. Usually it's a nurse that's going to come in and draw the blood. And the group of the nurses are not going to be Jewish. If a non-Jewish nurse comes and wants to draw your blood, so we have a right to say that even if I'm only a Cholesh Ein B'Sakonis, I'm merely Akum for a Cholesh Ein B'Sakonis. It's a little bit important. The doctor wants to know what's going on exactly, even though it's not life and death. It's at least a Cholesh Ein B'Sakonis. So that would be Mutter merely Akum. The problem is, if it's only a merely Akum, maybe this is worse than a merely Akum, because here I'm participating in the drawing of the blood, because I'm sticking my arm out. I'm saying, take a fist, you know, bring your arm up, you wrap the thing around, poke your bang, draw blood. So maybe that's more chomer than just regular merely Akum. So this is a big machlekes, the Taz and the Shach, not in Hukhah Shabbos, it was really machlekes, Taz and Shach, and Hukhah Nida, that ended up in effect being a big machlekes in Hukhah Shabbos by the fingernails. The famous machlekes, the Taz and the Shach, about a woman who's supposed to go to the mikvah on Friday night, so obviously she's supposed to cut her nails before Shabbos. So what if she forgot to cut her nails before Shabbos? So can she go Friday night to a goy and have the goy cut the, you know, Kodesh, a woman, cut her nails for her on Friday night? So the Taz says that he thought that was absolutely off. He thought that was an issur d'oraisa, because when she puts her hands out, when she's assisting in the cutting of the nails, so the Taz thought that was what's called Mesayeya Yesh Bei Mamish. He had a unique understanding of the Gemara, Mesechus Machos, and the Gemara Mesechus Beitza, which led the Taz to the conclusion that that's considered to be Mesayeya. That's not just a Mir Yacham, that's the Maisa HaYisrael also. And that would be Asam in HaTorah. And the Shach said that it's absolutely not true. The Shach and Lor, among Arichos, in Hukhaz Nida, and the Simin by of Chafifa, about... about this topic of the Shach and the Nekudas Bekesef, attacked this Taz and thought that absolutely was not true. That's called the Seyeh Einroi Mamish, and it's only a merely Akum, and therefore it's a merely Akum on a Derabbanan, the Shushushus Mafamitz, the whole one, the Megillah, the Chagis Taz and the Shach. The point that's relevant for us is that you accept the Shach and Allah, usually Taz and the Shach, usually follow the Shach. If you follow the Shach, the Shavura, the later post can basically follow the Halacha. That's what a minigun HaMikvos is today, that if a woman forgot to cut her nails, we will let her cut her nails on a day of Goy. So we accept the Shach LaHalacha, and this will become helpful for the drawing of the blood as well. When the Goy asks me, the nurse asks me to hold my hand up, to make a fist, to move around, so Tachlis, bottom line, she's the one who's sticking the needle in. So she's sticking the needle, she's the one who's drawing the blood, so that's not my Maisa, that's her Maisa. So it's a Miliakum, so I think those are significant grounds enough to be made, so that you don't have to drive everybody around in the hospital crazy, insisting that you're not going to draw the blood. So even, again, if it's Chashash HaSakana, you don't need the Shach. But even if it's not chashash takana, then it would be permissible. There is another interesting modern-day shaya that comes up in terms of throwing blood, which is the issue as follows. Also spoke about this last year, Masechta Shabbos. That's the issue of the cord blood. That those who are not familiar, so cord blood means as follows. We all know that it's called stem cells. There are certain, I can't much I know about this. There are certain things that we call stem cells, so those are good things to have around. Why are the good things to have around? If Khalil, if a person gets a disease, gets some kind of a blood disease, leukemia, something like that, later in life, so then you have to go scrounging around to go find someone who has a match in terms of a bone marrow in order to get the other person's stem cells to match up to your stem cells. That could sometimes be a very trying experience. So doctors came up fairly recently with the following great idea. Now let everybody provide themselves with their own stem cells. How do you do that? So it happens to be that the blood inside the umbilical cord is very rich in stem cells. So usually what happens when a baby is born, they cut the umbilical cord, they take the umbilical cord and throw it into the garbage. So somebody realized that not only are they throwing the umbilical cord into the garbage, they're throwing this potential reservoir of stem cells into the garbage also. And if they could somehow find a way to save that, to bank that blood and save it, so that may be the best possible transplant for the person himself. So the person could transplant his own blood. Instead of, why not have to go borrow somebody else's blood, which may or may not match, the person obviously is going to match themselves. That was the svara, that was the plan behind this idea. So basically what it included is as follows, because every time a woman gives birth, so we tell the doctor, so take some of the blood out of the umbilical cord, stick it into a test tube, and figure out how to keep it stored for the next 60 years. And it's 120 years for the person, for the rest of his life, you want to potentially have this stored. So they have the technology available, obviously, to do this, so that's in fact what's done. So this is Ma'aseh Michal Yom. Now, a lot of people do this when they have babies, that they store their cord blood. So basically the procedure is fairly simple. It's, they have a couple of labs in the country that do it. It happens for some reason all out on the West Coast. I can't figure that one out. But at least when I was doing it, so it was all on the West Coast. So basically it entails as follows. You have to contact the organization beforehand, and you have to, they send you this fancy kit, you bring it to with you when you go to the hospital, and then right after the baby's born, so before they get rid of all the umbilical cord, so they take out some of the blood, stick in the test tube, they hand it to you, and you got to call them some quick overnight delivery service, because it has to be delivered within very, very quickly. So if you think you're going to send it in the regular UPS, you can forget that. You have to get one of these $100 couriers who are going to come, you know, in the middle of the night and deliver it on the next plane out of the hospital. So that's what you do. So whatever costs. So of course, I don't know, I haven't done it in a little while, but when we did it for, I think, my oldest child, it was just in the barely, in the early, early stages, so it wasn't even really, we didn't even do it, because it wasn't really being done so normally then, but it's ready for my second child, so we already did it. So at that time, it was, I think, about $1,000 or so to store. I think the whole procedure cost about $1,000. You pay this company to deep freeze your blood for 100 years, and then they get you also, you have to pay them a $100 fee every year. So if you think about it, it's $1,000, $100 every year for the next 120 years. Right, after the kid turns 21, you hand them in the bill, whatever it is, it comes out to a decent amount. The good part is that if you recommend somebody else to this lab, so then you get a freebie on your storage fee for the rest. I think you get like a free storage for the rest of your life or something. So my wife teaches a lot of kallahs, so she always tells all the kallahs to always use our name for recommendations. So we got like stored up for the next, like, 300 grandchildren, you know, for free. I'm just kidding. I think we tried it one time. I don't know if it ever really worked. But Lamaisa, over the years, the price has gone down. Once it became, it's not a monopoly anymore. A few companies do it, so the price has gone down, I think, significantly. But whatever it is, so, it's a good idea. You know, the chiluka days and the doctors, is it really going to, is it really working out? But it's a Lamaisa for a couple of $1,000 and change, so it's probably a very good idea. So now they started something new, that let's say a person doesn't want to store for themselves, they want to create like a mosque for cord blood. So that's, then you don't have to pay for it, and there's some firm organization that does it. I forgot what it's called. Dor Yisharim is doing it now. There was another group that was doing it. Whatever it is, anyway, so whether you want to do it for yourself, or you want to do it for a gemach or something, so the shaila came up, what about on Shabbos? The person wants to, once you have a baby on Shabbos, so what are you going to do with the blood? So all the other, to say this is pikuach nefesh, it's hard to call that pikuach nefesh. It's not what's called chel lefaneinu. The guy's not sick yet. The guy should be healthy. I may have some shana. So to say that's a chel v'sheish b'sakana, it's a little bit far fetched. So to be matzah, let's say they're merely akapas, let's say to have somebody call the courier, and mishkafela, so those things are not so terrible. Have the nurse sign for you, so, it's not the end of the world. But the drawing of the blood, let's say you have a frum, your OBGYN is frum, Jewish guy. How can you ask him to draw the blood for you, to draw the blood from the court? It's a chavalah. This is the rights of chayvel. So when we were learning Maseches Ketubos, so we came to the realization that's not true. That's what we call halacha dam hefker pachad. That's the only case. That the Gemara is a whole sugya for three blood and suits and the dam besulim. The Gemara is a sugya in Shabbos about dam milan. It always ends up at the end that dam hefker pachad doesn't exist. But this is probably the only real dam hefker pachad that exists in the body, because to my the way at least the doctors explained to me, this blood is already cut off from the circulation. It means this blood in the umbilical is not going anywhere. It's already the umbilical is already tied. So it's this blood is mamish kamad the munach b'kufsa dam ya. So when you make a hole and you pull it out, so that's not the tilas neshama. It's not damo nefesh anymore. So that was what we came up with a couple of years ago, and I think that's what the psak should be. So halacha l'maaseh, those who want to do this for blood, so can do it even on Shabbos, and all the other assorted related malachas, so they should have drive in the hospital do it with the extra drawing of blood. So I think pashtus would be mutter even ayidei Yisrael. Okay, anyways, any couple of questions or?
So when a person has to have blood taken on Shabbos, is there a clue to ask if the nurse or whoever's taking the blood is Jewish?
You know, even in a place like New York, the Rove, I think Rove people who are drawing, you know, technicians who are drawing blood are usually going. Let's say the person comes with a big badge and it says, you know, Saracona on this thing, you know, then I would be a little nervous. But if the person has non-Jewish blood, I don't think you have to drive so crazy. I mean,
classification of internal injuries,
there's not a
like in the seat or
on the neck. Yeah, the Gemara does speak about the chol, those kinds of things. The pashut is that the doctors have to be the ones to be kaveh, whether it's glof to glof nefesh or not. You could potentially have a dental emergency that could potentially be glof nefesh. It's possible. But there's a toothache or something, there's not a zeh, you know, for one day, it's highly unlikely it's going to be glof nefesh.
We spoke a lot about shinoi. You may give some examples of
hazaras
of what?
Of a shina, yeah. The elbow of a shina, the teeth of a shina, those kinds of things are considered to be shina. Yeah, Gleital writes that when it comes to Shabbos, so a shina, even if it's not a shini in the pu'ula, if it's a shini in the po'el, that's also called the shina. In the Shabbos, it's not called malachas machsheva, so that if I do things, even though the mic, the malach ends up the same way, the light gets turned on. Rav Moshe had a svar not Rav Moshe had a suggestion, maybe turning on the light with an elbow is not a shina. The Pasha's the Gleital, it's not like that at all. I think the Pasha, what? No, I think Pasha is like Eglay Tal, that in Shabbos, that is called the Shina, so I think that's what the Eidim assume. I think you have to assume that way. That's it. Pasha, that's been a regular year. Temporary Allah, there's no Pasha. Not the temporary Chumash. Okay, good. Did I miss us? Okay, give me 1 minute, okay?
I was a lot, but I brought a lot.